Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Want to bet smarter? Start with smarter insights. Right now, you can check out Greg Peterson's MLB Best Bets, Wes Reynolds with his Zurich Classic Preview, and Mike Somich with all his NFL Draft Best Bets. Later today, you can check out Zach Cohen's NBA Best Bets and Player Props, Jonathan Davis's NHL Picks, Steve Mackinnon's MLB Analytics Report. Pardon me. Right now, you can sign up for our summer special for only $59 for full VSiN Pro access until August 1st. Just head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. Skill Alexander, we get tweets at Beating the Book. Best listeners in the game. I will fight anybody who disputes this. Jeff Holdorf is sharing that anonymous NFL assistant coach. Let me get that correct on what he or she said about Shedeur Sanders. Quote, the worst formal interview I've ever been in my life. He's so entitled, he takes unnecessary sacks, he never plays on time, he has horrible body language, he blames teammates, but the biggest thing is he's not that good. That last part would seem to me to be the headline, but, you know, whatever order you want to say it in. Frank Doyle, well, it's official, this draft makes no sense. On ESPN Bet, Shedeur currently minus 150 to go top 10, minus 120 to be drafted in the second round, and minus 260 to be the second quarterback drafted. Maybe we're all clowns for betting this in the first place. Like I said yesterday, the most inexact science there is, and we're betting on them playing it inexactly. Not Steph. Any Madrid WTA ATP picks today? Busy at work, so can't listen live. Vamos, Iga y Alcaraz. BB playing soon, too. Yeah, just gave him out. Again, the only one that is yet to start, Francesca Jones, is the only WTA play yet to start. I did not play any on the ATP side. Chuckism 1, broke into a neighboring bar to watch the game last night. Can we talk about all us bettors will do to watch the game? You broke into a bar. Wow, that's pretty good. John B, a screenshot of one of the worst draft bets he's ever seen. Cleveland Browns to draft both Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders. Yes is only plus 240 and there is no option. Looks like a DraftKings thing. Peter Schrager also mocking the Saints to go Mykal Williams at 9. Eric Berg saying you'll like the 9 spot on that one as well. Williams still at plus 370 to go exactly 9 at DraftKings. Oh, man. Give me that. Let that 7-1 cash. I'll be a happy man. And then New York NC Sports, he says, please, Jaguars? No. It's a joke. C. Spackler, the angst between Schrager and Schefter on ESPN is palpable. Schefter obviously feels threatened. Should be fun. And Matthew Mayberry, I feel like a big old square saying this. I don't get why Sanders is falling. I watched every one of his starts. He's very accurate. He's no Jaden Daniels, but he can move in the pocket. If the Steelers get him at 21, I think it'll be a steal. Mark me down as a believer. All right, so there's a different opinion on Shedeur. Will Hill, kind enough to join us for a couple today. He is the host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast. Again, he wanted to call it, I wish I had wagered an additional amount. Because I actually ended up winning the event, and now I have deep regret. And I said to him, just call it Shoulda Bet More. And he was like, okay, I guess I'll have to. He's also part of the Bear Bets empire. Chris Velika is over there at Fox Sports. And star of the Megapod, Will joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Did I say your full name, Will Hill? Maybe I should. How you doing, man?
What's going on? I think you covered it. Is everyone okay? Two segments? Are you that desperate? Did somebody get sick? Did somebody pass away? Is everything good?
Well, all right, if we figured, who would we want? Who of all of our guests today would we want to chat with the most? And we said you. And now you're twisting it around like we're not complimenting you. All right, that's fine. You can go after one if you want, Will. No?
I'm married, dude. I gotta figure out a way to twist things. That's what happens when you're married. You figure out a way to twist things and you use it against the other person.
Last night of the NBA, not quite as exciting as the night before. We had a few blowouts yesterday, all of them. Indiana, taking a 2-0 lead over Milwaukee. Dame played. He scored 14. It didn't matter. It ends up being a wire-to-wire win for the Pacers. They go up 2-0 in that best-of-seven series as we head back to Milwaukee. I guess the Bucks did get it down, I should say. They had a 13-0 run late when the Pacers were up 115-100. But then Siakam with a big three with 2:05 left, and then the Pacers never looked back. So that was the one moment where it was close. OKC, they don't win by 51, but they end up beating Memphis by 19. I guess Memphis can say, hey, we got it within 8 at one point. That was kind of cool. And then the Lakers and the Timberwolves, that series, by the way, OKC goes up 2-0 in that series. The Lakers do knot it up with the T-Wolves at 1-1 in a game where both teams were just, I don't really know what to say, 11 of 54 combined from 3. I had the over in this game. I don't know if I should even feel bad, right? Jaden McDaniels, Mike Conley, Dante DiVincenzo, Nickel Alexander-Walker combined to go 5 of 26. I mean, I don't know if it's just these teams were just rim clanging all night. I don't know if that was a bad bet or not. Anyway, any thoughts on any of those three series first before we get to tonight?
Yeah, it's funny how the good series just happened to fall on Thursday. Knicks Pistons and Clippers Nuggets, those two have been the most exciting. And it coincides with the draft. So you're looking at a hell of a night on Thursday night to get those two series to go with the draft, man. You're gonna need the remote control or go somewhere with multiple TVs because that's going to be a lot of fun. I'll start with Indy-Milwaukee. I don't think Milwaukee's completely drawn dead just because they do have Lillard back. You got a game where he's going to get rid of the rust here. And they're just Indy, the one saving grace for Milwaukee, they have no answer for Giannis, who had 34, 35 the first two games. So maybe you can get both of them at home, and then who knows, make it a best of three. It does seem like this is pretty inevitable that the Pacers win this series one way or another. But we've seen this before where series look different once you switch home courts, and Milwaukee's not played a home game yet, so I wouldn't completely count them out. Them to win in six is 9-1 if you think Milwaukee's going to rally, and even if you think they're just going to win the two in Milwaukee. So I'll pocket the 9-1 if it's 2-2 after four. Who knows? And then I can kind of fool around with that ticket and go from there. But I do think Milwaukee probably is I would say 50-50 chance, maybe a little better to get both in Milwaukee. I'm not completely sold that this series is totally over, even though I'd obviously pick Indy as they were favored coming in and up 2-0. And if it does end in Indy in four or five, even six, whatever, isn't it hard to see Giannis coming back there? I mean, what is around him? That the Lillard trade did not work the way they wanted it to. They've missed on all their picks, which, look, when you're good every year and you're picking in the late 20s, the Warriors went through this too, where you got to get lucky. You got to hit on some picks. You got to just, even though it's unlikely, you got to, even if you don't hit a homer every now and then, you got to hit a double or a single. And they just, that roster is really decrepit around Giannis. And it does, I think we were talking about this in the group chat the other day, one of the all-time great what-if moments. And it happened. Giannis made it to the finals, all that. Durant's foot on the line is really changes how we look at Giannis, because if he makes that three or four years ago, Giannis has never won a final, been to a final, a lot of first round exits. Obviously that happened and Giannis went on to win a title, but it certainly looks like it's gotten stale here in Milwaukee.
I don't see why it's not next to me. He's behind the glass and it's darkened, but I know he is just dying with every word that you're saying. He says, that's why I hate Vikings fans. He says in my ear, with the Giannis, what is there to stay for? And the whole, you're right about the historical thing. We'll never know, right? Durant's toe on the line there. Okay. So what about the other two games? Any thoughts on either of those? Oklahoma City, you can skip for now, but what about the Lakers and the T-Wolves? Do you have any sense of who really has the edge in that series?
I picked Lakers in seven. I was surprised at the consensus of everyone picking the Lakers. Minnesota has some advantages in terms of athleticism. I wouldn't put too much stock if you're a Lakers better into game two, because we see this all the time. Team loses game one at home, they come out and they roll in game two. And even yesterday, it's a 9-point margin. It's not like they won going away. So I don't see any reason to jump off that, but I think we're looking at a long series. I'm not sold that the Lakers get one in Minnesota. And here's the thing for the Lakers that's concerning. It's an older team. You're asking for a lot of minutes from LeBron and Luka and Reeves. And once you get to game four throughout the rest of the series, this becomes every other day. So now is the sweet spot for the Lakers where there's 2 days of rest in between, which I think helps them. Once you get to every other day, I'm still at where I was at the beginning of the series, where I just think with a deciding game at home and Luka and LeBron, that's the tiebreaker. And I'll go with the Lakers, but I would not be surprised if Minnesota won the series. I wouldn't be surprised at all. And that's that side of the bracket. These two teams, the Warriors and the Rockets, you avoid the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Thunder. I mean, this is the soft spot of the bracket, so to speak, where any one of these four teams, I don't know about the Rockets, but any one of these three teams, I would say, besides the Rockets, has a really good chance here to go to a conference final. Just quickly on the Memphis OKC series, I've been on this angle, and his points, rebounds, assists stayed under in game two. All of them stayed under in game one. He's avoided foul trouble, but Scottie Pippen Jr. guarding SGA. SGA is the greatest foul drawer pretty much we have in the game. Pippen Jr. is an aggressive defender. He had five fouls in the first game, and he didn't really get into foul trouble in game two. But if you're a believer of the angle that, hey, he can't guard this guy without getting into foul trouble, I would still look towards Pippen Jr. unders here for game three.
By the way, OKC, an 8.5-point favorite in game three at Memphis. That's tomorrow night. And then the two other series we just mentioned, the Bucks installed. Remember, you can't bet it unless it's installed, Will. Bucks 4.5 points favorite. 4.5 point favorites at game three against the Pacers back in Milwaukee. And the T-Wolves, 3 point favorites, field goal favorite against the Lakers in game three. Those two are on Friday. Tonight, a triple header. Let me just get one. Well, we ran out of time here, but we'll get to the three. Celtics, 10.5 point favorites tonight against the Magic. Cavs, 12.5 point favorites against the Heat. And the Rockets up to a 3.5 point favorite against the Warriors tonight. A little disrespectful on that last one, huh, Will? No.
It sure is, and I know we're going to break here. The worst rule change I think in my life is the first round of the NBA going from best of five to best of seven. We don't need a best of seven for a lot of these series. We really don't.
We don't. It's interminable. First round is interminable. Okay, Will's thoughts on all three games tonight, his MLB plays, and NFL draft thoughts as well. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
This summer, go all in at Circa Las Vegas with the ultimate getaway package, just $400. All in, just $400. You'll get a two-night stay at Circa, a $100 dining credit, a $100 beverage credit, and your very own day bed at Stadium Swim where the party never stops. What? All for just $400, resort fees and taxes included. This limited time offer is valid for stays between May 26th and September 4th. Don't miss out. Lock in your all-in summer package now at CircaLasVegas.com. I may buy that during one of these breaks. Wow. $400, two-night stay at Circa, $100 dining credit, $100 beverage credit, and your very own day bed at Stadium Swim, resort fees, taxes included. Do I need to say it a third time? No, I'll wait for another time. Will Hill, kind enough to join us for a second segment, at not the Will Hill on Twitter, by the way, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. To tonight's games, Will, in the association, let us begin. Let's do them chronologically. Orlando and Boston, game two. Boston with a 1-0 lead in this series. They won game one by 17, but Orlando was up a point at the half. What are you doing with this one, with the Celtics favored by 10.5 here?
Yeah, and we still have a doubtful tag on Tatum, I believe, which came out of nowhere, I thought. On Tuesday, yesterday, because he finished the game. He seemed okay. I'm going to go Orlando team total under. I gave it out last week for game one. I'm going to go with it until he beats me. Orlando's got some good players. They've got some size. The only problem for them, there's this thing called the hoop, and there's this other thing called the basketball, and they have a hard time putting one in the other. They can't shoot. They can't shoot. 11 threes made per game, worst in the league. 31% from three, worst in the league. That's during the regular season. And they actually shot pretty good from three in game one, 10 of 27, 37% for them. That's a hell of a day. And they still scored 86 points. There's so many options defensively for Boston to put on Banchero. And once you shut down Banchero, and even look, let Banchero score as much as he wants. There's just no other shooting. So barring an outlier shooting performance from Orlando, I just don't see a path for them to get to mid-90s, 95 points. So it's ticked down a touch. It's 92.5, 93.5 in that range. I will go under Orlando team total.
That's the thing about this old baloncesto. It's a very simple game. If the ball does not go through the hoop, yeah, it's really tough to win these games. The total, by the way, 196 now I'm seeing in some spots. Ooh, 196.
What year is this?
Exactly. I remember when I was a kid, it'd be nothing to have a playoff game. Where it was, first of all, the early 2000s was horrific basketball. When the Nets were getting to the NBA Finals, the Jason Kidd-led Nets, oh, that was so bad. But I remember the Bullets beating the Hawks 77-72, and people were like, yeah, sure, they won. Miami-Cleveland tonight, game two. Cleveland with a 1-0 lead in this series. Once again, for the second straight game, a 12.5-point favorite. Remember, they won game one by 21. It's a little deceptive because they were up 8 with about 7 minutes left. What do you got here?
I just don't see much of a path here for Miami. As great as Spoelstra is, as much as they've proven us wrong over the past couple of years with these ridiculous runs, they're outmanned here. Cleveland's really good. I don't know if they're going to beat Boston, but they're going to get to that series in the conference final. So I would lay it, if anything. I haven't bet it, but I think Cleveland rolls here.
All right, and then the Dubs and the Rockets. Dubs lead this series 1-0. Game two, still in Houston. Rockets, as we mentioned, 3.5-point favorites. Total 204. Warriors led by 23 at one point in game one. Rockets cut it all the way to 3 before the Warriors got them down the stretch. But the Rockets had a 52-36 rebounding advantage. and they were only 11 of 20 from the stripe. They had 16 turnovers, so a lot to clean up for the Rockets.
Yeah, Rockets 20% from three, and like you said, missed nine free throws, 55% from the line. You have correctly called the Warriors the most beautiful thing in sports, Warriors basketball. Boy, Sunday night was a reprieve from that. That was not pretty. Houston's almost like St. John's basketball or Houston University from past years where they just their offense is shooting, missing, and hoping you get something on a putback. That being said, it's interesting. Game two, when the road team steals game one, the team in game two that's at home usually rolls. But this is different because the Warriors are favored, and the Warriors are so experienced where they value the rest. They think, all right, if we get a close series here, a quick series, we can earn ourselves some rest, a little mini bye, which is valuable. That being said, I do think the advantage on the glass for Houston is sustainable. I think they'll shoot a little better. How could you shoot worse? I'm not cutting in line here to lay 3.5. I would pick Houston to win if I were to bet it. I would take Houston on the money line. Wouldn't feel great about it, but I do think Houston wins this game. And, you know, it's amazing. These teams met four times in 5 years in the playoffs from 2015 to 2019, two conference finals. That's a real rivalry. Here we are a decade later. Houston's got a whole new team, whole new coach, whole new everything. It's still Steph. It's still Kerr. It's still Draymond. Their longevity is really kind of underrated. And it is just, man, 10 years ago that first series was. That's hard to believe, too.
Bro, they won four championships. And they probably should have won six, right? Like the 3-1 against the Cavs where they go scoreless the last 440, the 73-win team. And then, you know, the year the Raptors beat him,
sure.
Durant
whole team got hurt.
Ruptures his Achilles and Clay blows out his knee. Okay, before we move on from the NBA, any thoughts? Obviously, there's three games tomorrow night, too. We mentioned the Thunder, 8.5-point favorites, but also the series knotted up at one apiece, the Knicks and the Pistons. That's a coin flip. Knicks are, I guess, a 1-point favorite at this point. And the Nuggets Clippers, the best series going, knotted up at one apiece. Clippers, 5-point favorites back in LA now for game three.
I'll start with my Detroit Pistons. I like this team. I picked them in six. I got 9-1. I see no reason to jump off. You can still get Pistons in six at 5-1 at DraftKings. I haven't shopped it too well. Not a lot of this stuff is up, but I just think that the Knicks are in some trouble. The Pistons shot 6-27 from three in game two and still won the game on the road. They've really outplayed the Knicks for a large majority of the series. I actually think Cade Cunningham's the best player in the series, and they're going to be home. The Knicks, really, their offense is come down. It comes down to Brunson basically just trying to get to the free throw line, which has not really worked. Pistons, outside of a 2-minute stretch where they just fell apart in game one, have dominated the series. I think the Pistons are getting both of these in at home, and I think they're going back up 3-1. So I like Detroit in game three, and I like Detroit in the series. And I picked Nuggets in seven. I was one of the few who didn't like the Clippers here. I'm a little concerned. It feels like the Clippers just have more answers, more options. It is kind of nice to see a vintage throwback Kawhi. Like, oh, we forget how great this guy was. You know, game two, he kind of reminds us. I would lay it with the Clippers. I think the Nuggets might be in some trouble would be my summary of that series. Great series, though.
Great series so far, anyway. What about Major League Baseball? Full slate today, full day baseball.
The Mets are good. But they're facing Wheeler tonight. 17-7 for the Mets. I think they're going to win that division. But Wheeler versus Peterson, that's a nice pitching advantage here for Philly. I took Philly -125 or so. And I like the Brewers getting a half a run in the first five. Webb against Peralta. I've been doing this a lot. That's a good pitching matchup. You could play under 3.5, which there's a narrow margin for error, play under 3.5 in a first five. I like getting a half a run. You only have to lay $1.25. There's just so many ways to win when you're getting a half a run in the first five, especially when the total is low. 1-1, 2-2. I love being able to win on a tie, win on a push here. So I will take Peralta, who's been great, and Webb, who's been outstanding too. You look at their advanced stuff, a lot of red, a lot of missed bats, weak contact, things like that. So I'll take the half a run in the first five.
Most wins March, April right now with what? That's 8 days left. Padres 17-7, Mets 17-7, followed by the Dodgers 16-8, and the Giants and Cubbies both with 15 wins. If the Mets win this, and I had them race to 10, I'm not going to hate myself too much, am I? Just going to be self-loathing.
What if the Giants, what if your Giants won and you didn't have them? You'd be mad at yourself for that one, too.
The self-loathing is in every direction. That's why I need the Dodgers to win this, and so I can move on to May.
Sure.
Real quick, I know you know I played this last night. I played at F3, F5, and full game again, but I failed to mention it on the show yesterday. It's the over in Sacramento. It's just an ATM machine so far. But the way that I'm playing it is I want it to be fly ball pitchers. Last night there were two fly ball pitchers. Today, J.P. Sears is a fly ball pitcher. But on the Rangers side, not really. Kumar is not really either a fly ball or ground ball pitcher. What are they putting the total at in this tonight again? Are you playing this at all? Are you playing the over? By the way, it's a 9.5 tonight.
I was late to the party. I played a couple of them that went under. It's like, you know, I missed the boat here. I missed the party. So I've been playing them selectively. It's not like I've been cleaning up on them though. But it's do you know top of your head what the over under is for this? I know the overs have obviously done well.
9.5
with that first five.
Kumar Rocker against J.P. Sears. 9.5 tonight. I think I might end up playing. I mean, Rocker doesn't fit the profile exactly, but I don't know. So I don't know. I'm not sure yet tonight with it. We'll see. Real quick before we go, any wisdom for us on the NFL draft, or are you in the same boat as everybody? You're like, whatever, we'll see.
I have the same information. I mean, we're all aggregating the same information. I will say this. If you're betting everything, just keep in mind this is all correlated. So if you have picks on who's going to go fifth and sixth and seventh and eighth, and you're wrong on five, it's like putting the wrong piece of the puzzle in the wrong spot. The whole puzzle is going to be wrong. So just I've been careful with it, somewhat careful. I've started to add more bets. I hope McMillan goes five. I think I don't buy this idea that the Raiders are going to take Genty at six. I think that they could use an offensive lineman. To me, Banks makes sense at that pick. You could still get around 10-1. So that would be my one if I had to give out a play. Banks six to the Raiders, I think, is worth a flyer. But it's getting harder and harder. These books aren't posting stuff. The information is, you know, you don't know what's a smokescreen and what's not. It's just it's a lot harder to bet than it's been in past years.
What do you have McMillan at five? What number do you have that at?
10-1 and 13-1.
Some people have rumored the Jaguars might go that way. We shall see. Will, good luck with all the bets today, man. Appreciate it.
All right. See you guys. Thanks for having me.
Will Hill, everybody. At not the Will Hill on the old Twitter machine. Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke. Everything he's betting next. Numbers Game. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. What's happening? What's happening, party people? Jonathan Von Tobel standing by to talk NBA with us. Maybe some draft nuggets. Jonathan Davis on the NHL playoffs. Sia Najad on golf in the NFL draft as well. Real quick, we get tweets at Beating the Book. Did you notice, it's Jason H11, did you notice that Jason literally had a cloud of smoke around him? Yes, it did. It was a little blurry. I noticed that as well. We're creating smoke now, I guess, around Jason. He did, by the way, just to clarify what he said out of the gate, because I was a little out of the break there, because I was a little confused myself. I thought he said Texas quarterback. He said Texas cornerback was his bet, right? Jade Barron going top 10. He's taking a flyer on that. But it sounded like he said Texas quarterback, so I was a little confused also. I'm sure there were some who were as well listening. And then the numbers, guys. If it's advantageous in betting to go down the road less traveled, Gil, should you be putting your efforts towards betting doubles tennis? I never hear anyone making picks on that. No, man, I'm not doing doubles. No. Singles is hard enough. Doubles is, you don't know who like is totally into it or who's not, besides the very doubles teams at the top. By the way, updating the tennis for today, we're 2-1. Hit on Carlay overnight for subscribers, VSiN.com/picks, plus 157 over Rebecca Stramkova. And here this morning, hit on Rebecca Masarova over Ayla Tomljanovic, minus 125. But we did lose on Suzanne Lemens as a dog against Emma Raducanu. Emma Raducanu and her lovely self winning that one. So 2-1 with Kruger up a set, and then Francesca Jones is the only one yet to go. Francesca Jones still has not started, plus 151 over Diana Yastremska, if you want to partake. He is our senior NBA analyst, and right now in the VSiN Killer Sports NBA Challenge, he sits in third place. He is knocking at the dough right now. Alex Christensen from BetUS is a 7-1 in first place, tied with Steve Fezzik, who's 7-2. JVT is 6-2, and he joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at @MeJVT. A fine start, sir, to the contest.
Yes, but a start nonetheless, so we'll see how we finish. That is the most important aspect of everything here, and the way that I like to handicap game to game, I'm sure that I will get my teeth kicked in at some point, flying in the face of the zigzag and all these other things, so we'll see how that works out. It didn't work out in the late game last night, that's for sure.
Give us the theory. Give us the NBA playoff theory. You just referenced zigzag. Give us the one that bothers you the most, that you just don't buy into, that you hear bantied around.
So for me, on top is the team down 2-0 going back home. So this is something, it's my quarterbacks in the first round of the NBA, Gil, right? So like every year, right, I bet under first round quarterbacks. I think it's ridiculous. It has done very well. And this down 2-0 trend for your audience, right? A team loses the first two games of a series, goes back home. The thought is that they're going to play much better. They're back at home. They're desperate. Since 2021, teams down 2-0 going back home. The theory is you bet them first quarter, first half, because they're going to get off to a good start. Well, if you bet them in the first quarter, you're 12-17 against the spread. And if you bet them in the first half, you're 13-16 against the spread since 2021. The theory here, of course, being that this has been very much factored into the market. You see it in so many different ways. You'll see team. One of the most egregious ones was a Denver Nuggets team. If you remember the year they got swept by the Suns, they were down 2-0 going back home to Denver. They were, I think, 3.5-point dogs for the game. They were 1-point favorites in the first quarter and 1.5-point favorites in the first half. Like, it's, you see stuff like that all the time, and it's something that drives me nuts. A lot of people will throw out the trend that goes back to 2013, but that is well before the books really caught up and priced all of this into the market. And I think you really should focus on the recent years, which, of course, it has been baked in, and I think it's a ridiculous thing to just blindly play, but a lot of people do it.
So there. I think that's a good nugget. Pardon me. I think that's a good thing to remind folks of, that these narratives are not often based in any kind of data. What about tonight's three games, John? I'm curious if you have any thoughts, any bets on any of them. Let's start with the Orlando and Boston game two. Boston with Tatum questionable here, 10.5-point favorites. They won game one by 17, but they did trail by one at the half.
Yeah, so I did the right now it's like you said, it's 10.5. So I didn't actually have a bet here. I did the contest thing, which was like, well, it's 12.5 of the contest, so I'll use Orlando here. It doesn't look like Jason Tatum's going to play. Unless he was upgraded, I think he's officially, like, designation-wise doubtful with this wrist injury that he's going to have. Orlando is the better defensive team, and if Tatum's not going to be out there, you should be able to kind of put the clamps down and keep yourself within a pretty big number as this thing. I think it's something that really is going to work in their favor. So especially at 12, you were fine. At 10.5, just sit back and wait, see if you can get something in game. Didn't really have anything, at least in Orlando and Boston.
You want any part of 196.5?
I think you're going under, if anything, right? I mean, I know this low total, a lot of people would initially think like, wow, this is ridiculous. No, I mean, look, Orlando, if they're going to win this game, if they're going to cover, it is going to be a contest in which they stay inside of this number because of the way they play defensively. They're not a good three-point shooting team. They're not a high-volume three-point shooting team. Part of their logic would be running Boston off the three-point line and getting those looks not to go down, or at least contesting some of those, forcing them to go inside of the three-point line. That, of course, is not conducive to scoring either. I think that that's going to be a low-scoring game. So to me, it would be under 197, and I think we're going to start to head that direction. I think a couple of spots are already down to 196.5.
Yeah, I saw 196, and then it popped back up to 196.5 offshore. Yep. Here. Miami-Cleveland game two tonight in terms of the chronology of the tip-offs. Cleveland a 12.5-point favorite again in game two, up 1-0 in this series.
I want to, so the way that I've described this is like, I want to give Eric Spoelstra credit. I mean, you know, like he deserves some credit with the way that he can coach. I think that he's going to be good for at least sometimes getting his team inside of some of these games, being competitive. Look, they were inside of the number a vast majority of that game in game one on Sunday. And then, of course, they let go of the rope and they end up not covering that one. I don't think it would be a surprise to ask Miami to do this. But Gil, I think there's just so many different things that they have at issue here. Their biggest weapon is their zone defense. Well, the Cavaliers can shoot pretty well. They can shoot over the top. They can break them out of it. They've got versatile bigs that can go into the teeth of the defense and pass around. You've got guys that on the perimeter, you're going to have trouble guarding because you don't really have great perimeter defenders that can keep up with both Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. You saw that. The Cavaliers were touching paint almost every single time, getting in the restricted area, neither finishing at the rim or kicking it out to open shooters. So I think it's a matchup that doesn't really work well. And my only thing is maybe Spoelstra, like, puts it together with glue, duct tape, and whatnot to get him inside of that number. But that's not something I want to handicap and bank on in a game in which I think they're so severely outmatched.
All right, Rockets are 3.5-point favorites. They're obviously down 1-0 in this series against the Dubs. Talked about it earlier how a lot didn't go the Rockets' way. They did have a 52-36 rebounding advantage in game game one, but they missed 9 free throws. They were 11 of 20. They had 16 turnovers. This total is a massive adjustment to JVT. It's gone from 213 to 204. What do you make of that?
I tend to lean over just because, again, like, Houston can't be that bad on offense again, one would assume. I mean, they were so bad in game one, and a lot of it had to do with, I think, their own failings. Fred VanVleet, you would expect a good three-point shooter and just overall offensive player. He's fine. He's not going to have the same game that he is going to, or that he did have in that last game. Better variance in terms of three-point shooting for these teams, especially for the Houston Rockets. And we did see the Alperen Şengün did actually do a pretty brilliant job. Yep. He was generating second-chance opportunities, and he was getting there, and they were having issues containing him. So I think that this is a game where I'd be pretty interested to kind of buy back on getting this thing over the total. I understand why we're getting as low as we are, but I think there's a lot of indicators that could get you to the point where this game goes over the total. So I think it's a pretty extreme adjustment when you're talking about that. I know that pace-wise, too, it was a pretty slow game. That might get you. It was only 88 possessions in game one. But I think that this ultimately quickens up a little bit here, and you get some better offensive variance, and it goes over a very much adjusted total here.
Yeah, I thought it was a big adjustment on the Lakers-T-Wolves total last night. I went over, and then these teams went 11 of 54 combined from three. That ain't going to get it done. So sometimes it's just a clang fest. What about tomorrow and the next night? What is the game that you have the most betting conviction on?
So actually, it's this game here a little bit. I will say really quickly that I did take three with Golden State. It's looking like the wrong number because we're up to four in some spots. Again, the zigzag is ridiculous. I think this is insane that this was 1.5 and now we're up to four at multiple spots for Houston. So I would take four with that one as well. When you talk about the next one, or at least in the next couple of days, give me Detroit. It's going to be a pick. I got it a pick here against the New York Knicks. I think the Knicks are in trouble, Gil. They don't really have an answer for Cade Cunningham. He has been pretty solid in the first two games. They have to use their best defender and OG Anunoby for him. So then you look around at the floor, and other guys like Tobias Harris are having a lot of success in this series. I think that this is a very average to below average defensive team in New York. And I don't know how much you've watched in the regular season, but I will tell you, those home games for Detroit are going to be unreal. They have not won a playoff game since 2007. They have not been in the postseason since, I think, 2017. I think that this is going to be something where they walk into a hornet's nest against a team that I think actually matches up somewhat well with them, the Knicks, that is, and they get it taken to them. So I think pick is fair with the Detroit Pistons there in game three back at home.
The Knicks just also feel like one of these rosters that has a ceiling, and it is like a clear ceiling. Like, does anybody really think that's a championship caliber team? They can't possibly.
No, I don't think so, especially when you compare them with their peers, right? And I'll say this too. I mean, look, this is more of like an aesthetic thing that kind of irritates me, but they are very reliant on how the game is called, right? Like, Jalen Brunson very much needs that game to go in his favor in terms of officiating because he's always hunting for those free throws. And if they're not getting them, as you've seen in this series, like the first few games, you're letting them play, and that has very much frustrated this New York Knicks offense and has put them in a weird spot where they have been just very disjointed. They've also, the Pistons, switched the way they've defended Karl-Anthony Towns from the regular season to the postseason. He has not figured that out. He has been absent throughout two games now too, and I have to go on the road and do that. I just don't buy that this is going to be a situation where the Knicks can thrive. So I think it's a pretty good spot to go and pick with the Pistons.
All right, last 30 seconds here, John. Give me the JVT most outlying NFL draft opinion that you have.
I mean, it's not outlying anymore. Every year it's under on quarterbacks, right? But it seems like the market is in my favor now here.
I forgot that's your thing.
Every year. For your audience, by the way, this is the ninth year we've had it out here in Las Vegas. We are 6-2 to the under on quarterbacks in the first round. It did go over last year. And I keep invoking this, Gil. I think this is the Kenny Pickett draft, right? Where we had a number of 3.5 quarterbacks in the first round, and only one went in the first round. He went in the 20s. Ironically enough, Steelers might be one of the guys that go in, one of the teams that go get Shador. But I do think that this is a draft where we're going to see maybe two guys go in the first round.
That's right. Kenny Pickett was the only quarterback to go first round his year. That's right. Kenny Pickett, who says, oh, I'm going to be the starter in Cleveland, by the way, this year. Thank you, John. Appreciate it as always, man. Good luck with all the bets.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
JVT crushing right now in the VSiN Killer Sports Challenge. Again, you can check out everybody's picks at VSiN.com/challenge. Coming back with Jonathan Davis on the NHL next.
A numbers game. Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Ready to get in on the action? First Bet has you covered. Sign up now to access exclusive promotions and bet on hundreds of thrilling horse races every day right from your phone or computer. Visit firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And use promo code VSiN200 to score a 20% rebate on all your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Start betting today at firstbet.com. Skill Alexander, Kelly Bidlin still on vacation. Hanging out in Turks and Caicos. He'll be back next week. Wyatt Tomchek doing a bang-up job in his stead, for sure. This next gentleman is the host and analyst for Sportsline. You can follow him on Twitter at Sianejad. That's S-I-A-N-E-J-A-D. But as I discovered this past week, he is a man of many talents. He does a podcast on other subjects as well. He joins us now to talk some golf and maybe some macro NFL draft thoughts as well. He joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Sia?
Gil, thanks for that wonderful introduction. Yeah, I do some motivational stuff and you know good habits and things like that. I host some podcasts and some shows in that regard as well. I even do a show called Sianejad Sports. I'm not trying to promo it. I'm really trying to invite you on the show because I have people come on that show, tell their story to inspire others to make their own story. So maybe you could come on that show.
I'd be honored to come on, Sia. Thank you so much. I'd be honored to come on. I would imagine you gain fulfillment from both in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Gil, you know my background, right? I was an attorney. I jumped into pharma for a little bit. Then I became a media and an analyst person. I never like to pigeonhole myself in. And if others do, that's fine. But my preference is to kind of skate along a lot of different paths. And if I can help people and motivate people and create some good habits through some of the content I do, and while at the same time doing sports content and being a host and things of that nature, I may as well take advantage of all those opportunities. All
right. I missed the pharma part in the middle there. You just slipped in. I wasn't familiar with that part, but I saw you're just like, oh, pharma, and then you're moving on. okay, well, you're here to talk a little golf with us. The Zurich Classic. We're still a few weeks away from the PGA, second major of the year in golf. First of all, do you have any PGA bets? Have you made any of those, or do you usually wait till week of?
Oh, you're talking about the PGA Championship. So it's a really good question. Normally I have bets already, but because sometimes it's just schedule issues with respect to the shows I do and the content that I do for like the weekly golf stuff and the NFL stuff. So that's a long answer to say, no, I don't have any outrights for the PGA Championship.
Okay. Sorry to shorthand the PGA Championship as the PGA. I was being too cool for school there. all right, Zurich Classic. Explain to us this format first.
It's pretty crazy, and I think for whatever reason it turns people off because it's a different type of format. I'm here to tell you that actually, personally, and maybe I'm in the minority, I think this is a really entertaining event. So you've got 82 person teams, and you're basically pairing up and playing best ball days 1 and 3. So you play your own ball, and that's where like the birdies and the eagles might come in because you've got two cracks at the apple, right? You've got either you or your teammate have an opportunity to score, and you're going to take the best score. On Friday and Sunday, that would be day 2 and day 4, it's alternate shot. So for example, Rory's at the top of the board. He's going to go off the tee. Then Shane Lowry's going to hit the approach shot. Then Rory's going to hit, you know, hopefully a putt in this case, and back and forth. So it's an interesting event because especially on Friday and Sunday, I think there's some theater in leaning on your partner and having to rely on your partner for every other shot.
See, as hack golfers, I won't include you, but as hack golfers like myself, this is how golf should be played. This is how you make golf fun for those of us who suck at this. But for these guys, right, this is Shane Lowry, Rory McIlroy. They are the short shots to win this at plus 360. Everybody else, starting with Kurt Kitayama and Colin Morikawa, 14-1 and longer. In the outright market, who did you go with?
So it's interesting because you mentioned Shane Lowry, Rory at the top of the board. They were last year's winner. And I think conventional wisdom would be, okay, look at this board. Obviously, they're going to win it again. It feels like a Scottie Scheffler situation and like with an even weaker field than he normally has. But the way this tournament usually plays out, it's a lot of these no-name or just very much under-the-radar teams that are in contention. For example, Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy, well, yeah, they won last year, but they had to go to a playoff to win it against, wait for it, Martin Trainer and Chad Ramey. Gil, ask you, do you know who those two people are?
Oh, sure. No, not at all. I don't.
Well, so that's the thing, and no disrespect to them, but the point I'm trying to make here is within the top five, some of my outrights were tied for fourth. Two of my outrights were actually tied for fourth last year. The year prior to Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry winning, you had Nick Hardy and Davis Riley, two more names that aren't household names, obviously. Granted, the year before that, it was Xander and Cantlay. My point is, there's a lot of variance in this tournament. It's partly because of the Thursday and Saturday rounds where you can really pile up the birdies and just have a player get super, super scorching hot. So I've gone down the board a little bit. Nikolai Højgaard at 28-1 with his brother Rasmus Højgaard. You know, neither of these guys playing great, but Rasmus has picked it up a little bit. I love the obvious chemistry here with these two guys, you know, new to the PGA Tour, really trying to grind to a win. I think 28-1 is a fine number, especially given their upside and their potential. Max Kraserman, Nico Echeverria, these guys are flat out scores. You might hear the term team no putt. This is team all putt. These guys poured in from anywhere on the green, but I do think they have the makeup to be good on a course like this where you can pile up birdies. Garrett Kiggo won last week, but I'm not going to hold that against him. Ryan Fox, I think, is a very high pedigree player that just hasn't played well over the last year or so. Higo and Fox and Grazerman and Nico Echeverria, they were tied for fourth last year, so they have good experience on this track. And then finally, this is a super long shot. You don't even have to bet this if you don't want to. Put a dollar on it. I like the upside of Chris Ventura and Antoine Rosner. They're 100-1. Again, that's a super long shot play. It's those first three that right away, those three jumped out at me.
Wow. I like those in terms of the length there. 28-1 all the way to 100-1 for some of these plays. And then in case you were worried that because it's a sort of a you know, 82 team or two player teams, that Sia would not have first round leaders, which is what he's known for in a regular event. Fear not. He has first round leader plays here. What do you have?
Yeah, I've picked four. I wanted to narrow it down to three since we only have 80 teams, but I'm just going to give you four, and I'll tell you the one that you could leave out if you wanted to. Keith Mitchell's been great in first rounds. Anybody who follows golf knows that Keith Mitchell's cashing first round tickets, and he has a really good partner in JT Poston. So I think 28-1, very fair number. They go out in the morning. Rasmus and Nikolai, the Højgaards, of course, they go out in the morning as well. I love their upside, and Rasmus has been particularly good early in tournaments as of late. Grazerman and Echeverria, that would be the team to leave off at 40-1 only because they go out in the afternoon, and I typically like to lean to the morning guys, even though it doesn't look like the wind's going to be a huge problem in the afternoon. And then finally, Rico Hoey, Sam Ryder. These guys are like first round leader kings, especially Sam Ryder, in terms of just like really getting hot in the first round. Rico Hoey, really good tee to green. He's got to get the putter going. But I think 45-1 is a really good number. The Keith Mitchell one and the Rico Hoey one were like very easy auto clicks for me.
All right. And then top 20s on Mitchell, Poston, and Higo Fox, sort of staying consistent with that as well.
Yeah, I think these are reasonable numbers. If you want to get a little bit more frisky, I mean, I think Mitchell Poston in the top 10 market is close to plus 200. Many people will defer to that over the minus 135, but I just think top 20 for those two was a very comfy place to be.
All right, NFL draft, macro thoughts. You're in the DMV, as the kids call it these days, where you can bet this in D.C., but not in Maryland, Virginia. Is that true?
I'm not sure about Maryland. I know in Virginia, I can't see the draft props, but when I go to DC to go to Monumental Sports Network, for example, then all of a sudden the props pop up. So yes.
Okay. What did you make any bets? What are your general thoughts here?
You know, one of the bets that I haven't made it yet, and I'm just kind of waiting to see where the line goes. It was plus 150 for under 2.5 quarterbacks in the first round. Again, that's one I'm just kind of like battling back and forth. And the reason I'm battling back and forth is I do like the line of like not three quarterbacks going in the first round. But I also always fear that team that's just going to trade into the late first round and grab a quarterback because they see some upside with somebody. So that's the one I'm considering the most. And for the record, I think the intrigue with the quarterbacks is, first of all, this is not a good quarterback class. I don't think I'm breaking any news here. I don't even think Cam Ward's going to be that successful in the NFL. That's just my take.
I'm with you.
Particularly not with the Titans. But the fact that Shador has fallen so far, that we're talking about Jackson Dart and Jalen Milrow and some of these other guys that might even jump Shador Sanders, I just think that makes for a very interesting day one, potentially day two.
I feel like Jackson Dart might be the best of the bunch, but again, I'm no talent evaluator. We'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. But yeah, that quarterback is going to be fascinating. JVT was just on. He says he thinks this is the Kenny Pickett draft, where only one quarterback goes into the first round. Todd McShay says under for sure, based on the people he's talked to. And as I've said numerous times, and you know, ad nauseum here, because finally the draft will get here, we don't have to talk about it anymore. But if you have these guys evaluated as QB 6 and 7 from last year, right? Just think about that. then do you really want to? It's you fight the instinct. You're nothing without a quarterback. But if these quarterbacks aren't very good, what are we doing? So it's gonna be fascinating how it plays out tomorrow. It's a tough, you know. Look, there's a lot of people who listen to when we talk NFL draft, and there's a group of the audience. There's a percentage of the audience that hates the draft, and they're like, oh my god, I can't wait till this is over. And by the way, it will be over. We won't talk about it next week at all. It ends this week. But there is a percentage where it's like, this used to be such a moneymaker. The problem is when you get to a draft like this, where it is so uncertain, after a little while, we're just saying the same speculative things over and over again. And we can just sort of give you the, what I think you should do is bet teams' positional stuff, because that's what would be the best bang for your buck based on a draft that goes wacky. You know, again, I have New Orleans defensive line edge 7-1 to go first. You should be doing that for a bunch of teams. I agree with
that 100%.
Yeah, that's the only way to bet this thing, I think, this year. Sia, thank you so much. I'd love to do your podcast. I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
I love being on with you. Thanks so much, Gil.
Sia Najad from Monumental Sports and Sportsline. Coming back with final.